The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, Confederation championships, World championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Greetings, friends. Welcome to the TWBC podcast, and thank you for listening. In terms of superlatives for the subject of this podcast episode, there is very little that hasn't already been said. Regina Jaques is quite simply one of the finest skiers to have ever competed, man or woman. Multiple world titles in every level of the sport that she has been eligible to compete in, along with world records, professional titles, and so much more. She even takes time to give back to the sport, whether it be through coaching a women's clinic like the one at Bennett's recently, or helping to organize events like the Malibu Open. On top of that, she works at and owns a pharmacy in the Sunshine State, typically producing medicines from scratch. If you're looking for an overachiever in this world, we bring you Exhibit RJ. So, let's get on with it. Here is the first of a two-part interview with Regina. All right, so we're here at Bennett's Water Ski School in the midst of the pro clinics. Regina Jaques, thank you very much for spending a little bit of time with this podcast. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you, Tony. We've had a great day, and we've had a ladies' clinic, and all these ladies are amazing and awesome. They're strong skiers, and they're very independent women and powerful women. So it's been a great weekend for all of us here.
And just in case you're wondering about all the noise in the background and all that kind of stuff, they're in the midst of the steak dinner that's held towards the end of the pro clinics. And we will actually be listening in from some of them. They might ask a question or two if they feel so inclined. But
oh boy,
yes indeed. So, not only are you a pro skier, multiple time world champion, but you're also a pharmacist. But not the kind of pharmacist that we would ordinarily deal with if we went to like a Walmart or a Rite Aid or a Walgreens. You are a step above.
I am a compounding pharmacist, and I have my own business. It's called Emerald Coast Compounding Pharmacy. We're in the Panhandle of Florida, and compounding pharmacy is actually the origins of pharmacy. It's how pharmacy actually originated back in the day. You know, you didn't go to the doctor, and they prescribed you something, and then you went to the pharmacist to fill it. You went to the pharmacy, and you told them your ailments, and you know, back then it was more with plants and herbs, and that's how you would fix any problems that you may have. And so that is the origins and the basis of compounding. Now compounding's evolved so much too. We do dermatology, veterinary medicine, pediatric, geriatric. There's so many different fields in that era.
Okay, and from what I understand, not only do you provide compounding services in pharmacy for us humans, but also for veterinary purposes as well, from what I understand.
Oh, yes. We have our furry patients that we take care of. And so, you know, I'm a dog person. I'm an animal person. So I actually do enjoy, you know, taking more interest in the veterinary side. We do a lot with the dogs and cats, but we also have guinea pigs, ferrets, parrots. We have a retired Arlington horse as well. So we do have a great veterinary side in our store there at Emerald Coast Compounding Pharmacy.
Excellent. Okay. We'll get back a little bit to the pharmacy a little bit, but one of the main reasons why I have you here for the podcast is to talk about your achievements and what you plan on doing, you know, in the immediate future with tournaments and that kind of stuff. So,
But two more recent news. One particular high-rated tournament has announced equal prize money for women's competitors between the men's and women's. Obviously, that's something you applaud. But this isn't the first time that we've seen this, have we? And a lot of it is due with your relationship with. Between you and the late great Dana Reed, is that
yes? Actually, Dana Reed has basically through my whole professional career of water skiing taught me about the equal pay for women and men. In fact, Dana Reed, who was our starter and founder of the Malibu Open, had the women's tour once the women were kicked off of the pro tour, and he started that. His first two girls were more Karen Trulove and April Coble Eller, and he didn't want them to not have a pro event, so he took that onto himself, and he had a pro event for women's slalom, and then that took off and it was amazing, and women's slalom became its own tour. Well, then the men started losing their funding and came crawling to Dana Reed and basically said, can you put us on? And Dana said, yeah, of course. And Dana Reed, he was an amazing man. He loved water skiing. He loved the women of water skiing. He loved putting on a tournament. He put his own, not just time and sweat and tears, and his family's time and sweat and tears, but his own money into making these tournaments happen for the pro skiers when pro skiing was at a low point. But the men came on and it was equal pay, and it never changed even to this day with the Malibu Open. And that's what we always talk about when we go over, because I do help with the Malibu Open and putting it on. And every year we talk about, okay, prize money. Well, Dana Reed said it's equal, so that's where we're going. But in fact, when the men started coming on, I was pretty young at the time. Maybe I was like 15, 16, I don't know, somewhere in that time frame. I remember we would be doing the tournament, doing the cash prize event, and we'd be on the trophies and the awards, and he would give all the women an extra dollar bill just so we actually weren't equal pay. We got higher pay.
There you go. All right, then. So obviously, you praised Dana Reed, and God rest his soul. I mean, I'm sure he's looking down upon you ladies and for all that you achieved in the Malibu Open and beyond that. But let's stick a little bit to your own personal achievement, because, I mean, I don't know. You've probably won a world title in each world championship since 2005. Is that fairly accurate, or at least a medal in
Yeah, I would say at least on the podium. So it's I've been very fortunate and very blessed, and have had such an amazing support system that's allowed me to be able to do that, even in times of going through pharmacy school where I wasn't necessarily on my 100%. I was balancing trying to become a pharmacist at that time too.
That's like nearly 16 years, isn't it? When you think about it, think back to 2005, even beforehand, because I mean, you're on the junior teams in like 20 of, or even the under 21 teams in 2003, mm-hmm. and a little bit beforehand, you were winning titles then, So I mean, you've had a pretty long and illustrious career.
Yes, it has been. Like I said, it's just been a pretty blessed career. I haven't really been able to take it all in, actually, just because, it's just been amazingly high on all of the successes, and it's definitely not just the sports system, but my just me and my drive to want to get there.
Okie dokie. And part of your drive for getting there is being able to dedicate yourself to one event in particular, and it's not slalom, folks. It's overall, because you are a triple threat when it comes to women's tournament skiing on a global level. So kind of give us an idea of what it's like to train for that particular event, because in my mind it should be a standout event, and yet in the last few years it hasn't gotten the respect that it deserves.
It's a tough event. You do find a lot of the pro skiers that you know today, their names and everything, they actually started out as three event skiers. You know, I mean, that's pretty much how we all come into the sport. We ride jumpers, we try to go over the ramp, we are on the trick skis, we're on the slalom skis. But then we come to a point where we realize we need to focus on one event. We are stronger on one event. The other two are too hard to keep up with. Jump, I mean, that's all the risk in the world that you could hurt yourself and be out of the game on the other two events. So, you know, you do start to see that all of us that are on this slalom tour, jump tour, trick tour, whatever, we all actually started out as three eventers. To continue the three events for the longevity that I've had is a challenge. It's tough. It's hard work. There's one event that's never where you want it, and then you put in the challenge that you have pro slalom tournaments that you got to go to. You neglect the other two, and then you're mid-season. You get ready for Worlds, and you're like, oh, wow, the season's over, and I really should be more farther along in the other two events, but I spent most of my time going to slalom tournaments. So it's a struggle, but it's worth it to me because that's, you know, how I grew up skiing, and I don't really know any other way. And really, you know, I love each event. I don't know which one, if I had to say today which one I would give up, I couldn't tell you which one it would be.
All right then. Obviously you dealt a little bit with training for the Worlds, but let's go into record breaking, because last year, and you knew of this a little bit more retroactively than you did before, you actually had an attempt at the world overall record at a pro tournament in the Midwest. And how close were you to actually taking the world record away from Natalia Bernacava?
I think it was like 4 points by the end of the day. Actually, when we left the site, we thought that, you know, everybody said, oh, you broke it. But then come to find out with the calculations, it was about 4 points off. So it's definitely in reach, and it's one of the goals that I definitely want to, you know, strive to get that title back. You know, from Natalia, it's definitely, and she's a teammate. You know, we went to school together and on ULM, and she put it out there. So I'm appreciative that she did that. She took it from me, and I kind of want to try to, you know, I it's right there, so I think I can get it back.
So remind me what scores you had in that particular tournament to get you that close. I think it was something at 41,
so,
wasn't it?
I think I was... For that round, I was 2.5 at 41. I was 8,400 or 8,490 maybe. And then I was 180 in the jump.
Okay, so...
I just needed to stand up and maybe get three. I try to turn three to go to four.
Okay, but it's probably fair to say that you probably got a little bit more room for improvement in the tricks and possibly the jump as well. Mm-hmm. So are you edging your efforts more towards those for another attempt at the world record, or are you just looking for consistency right now prior to the Worlds coming up in October?
You know, probably a little bit of both. And it's not that I neglect my slalom, because, you know, I'm ready to get five. I'm ready to run the pass. So the world record, I'm ready to push that further in the slalom event too. And Malibu and Good have really helped with being able to help push my slalom and push that 41 pass down the end of the rope or into the course there. So I don't think I'm going to focus too much on one, and, you know, especially for Worlds, like you said, I think I'm going to try to make sure I can be consistent there, but definitely try to break the barriers on all of them.
Now, you have an uncanny ability of actually steering a podcast towards a certain direction, it seems, because you mentioned Good, you mentioned Malibu. Let's talk about your relationship with those cats.
Yep, so I've been with Malibu Boats for a long time. They are a amazing boat company. We've released the TXI, and, you know, it's we've had, every time we've released a new boat from the LXI to the TXI, we've always been on such a timing with where I'm at a peak that it's another record-breaking, you know, title that comes along with it. In fact, when I first signed with Malibu, the next tournament I went to after I originally signed with them, I called them to say I just broke Christy Overton Johnson's world record. And, you know, we've just established such a great relationship. They support all three events. You know, they have a great tournament that the Malibu Open that we've had for, you know, that Dana Reed actually started and we've had for several years now going. It's a great successful tournament. We have Solomon Jump there. We've tried the overall as well. It's just something that we've always, you know, tried to bring back. Into it because Malibu Open actually existed before Dana Reed started it, and it's just been a great company. I'm a great, you know, I'm just proud to be part of it. And then, you know, I have a unique relationship with the Good Skis. I've been on a Good slalom ski for pretty much my entire slalom professional career, so that's something to say just about the product itself.
Yeah, you're right, because I can't even remember you on being on any other brand of ski, even right back to as you were progressing out of the juniors or through the under 21s. I mean, that's pretty good tenure right there.
Yeah, and that just goes to show you about the ski itself, the quality of it. And being on a ski that long, there's no doubt that you become established with the company, and your relationship with Dave Good and Don Good is nothing less than what it was. You know, we were best friends, family, and partners. You know, we strived, and Dave was just amazing at what he did. He, you know, we would be at a tournament, and I would win, and he would just be like, "Oh, you only won by half a buoy, Regina. Like, I can build something better." So.
High expectations.
Okay, let's go back to the drawing board. And so, you know, I mean, those are things that I'll definitely miss. But with the company itself, we have a team in place that is definitely going to be able to carry out those high expectations that he requested of us.
Which leads me to the Dave Good Foundation.
Yes, so we did establish, Don and I had started the Dave Good Foundation. And it's just, and it's baby stages. It's at the very beginning, and it's right now we just wanted to get it established so that we could carry on his name and his legacy, because there's no doubt that Dave Good's name should never be forgotten in the water ski world, not only in the water ski world, but everything also that he did in the snow ski side of things. His business that he started from the ground up is something that he was an entrepreneur, and he became amazingly successful, and then thank goodness he got into water skiing, and that's where, you know, we are today.
Of course, a lot of people know that he started life in the snow skiing field. He was manufacturing ski poles for the likes of Mark Giardelli, who's like multiple time FIS World Snow Ski Champion.
You did your history.
I mean, there were photos in these initial advertisements for the ski poles with a great big picture of Mark Giardelli, so that's how I know. And I was been a fan of downhill skiing for quite a while. But
well, Dave was actually going to be on the U.S. Olympic team.
Wow.
And then he broke his ankle. And so that's where the actual entrepreneurship of Good Ski Technologies came from.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. I'm gonna use that in some commentary or something like that. But obviously, we're dealing with a personal relationship between you and Don Good and Dave Good and those that are closest to you. A recent relationship has kind of cropped to the surface in the last few years, and that's the coaching relationship between you and Jay Bennett.
Yes.
How did that give us the circumstances behind that and how that reconnection kind of established itself?
I mean, I went to college in Louisiana. I was at University of Louisiana Monroe. I got into pharmacy school, stayed in Louisiana for about 7 years, and I did come down and ski at Bennett's multiple times. We had collegiate nationals here, I think, 3 of my 4 years. I wasn't a stranger to the Bennett Ski School. But then I, you know, graduated, moved on, got my career outside of skiing, kept skiing. And Jay's at the Masters with Ann, his wife, and I'm skiing, I jump, and I'm just in a funk with my jump. I just couldn't figure it out, and I pretty much hit the side curtain, made my jump, broke my fin, didn't realize, horrible masters for jumping. Slalom was great. I did win slalom. I took my aggression out on that. But for the jumping part, it was just, I was like, wow, I'm going to get hurt. Like, I should quit. Like, I shouldn't do this anymore. Like, I don't know what happened, but it turned quick. And Jay, being the coach that he is, of course, is always watching. You know, he sits there, he watches everybody and every event. So he called and he's like, hey, you know, like, what's going on? I'm like, Jay, I don't know. Like, my jumping has just gotten bad. And, you know, by this time, I'm a couple weeks later and I'm at another tournament. I broke another fin. I'm like, I'm just nailing the side curtain. It doesn't matter how early or how late I am. I'm going to nail the side curtain.
It's a good thing that jump fins are relatively cheap compared to jump skis.
It was just, you know, something that I couldn't figure out. And Jay just basically said, get over here. And he turned my jumping around. I've been able to, I went 182 last year. I went 180 several times. It's just been an amazing thing for me to have a coach come in at this late in my career. You know, and not, you know, I've gotten through so much. I've been on the podium some jump. I've, you know, been world overall champions. I've had the successes, and, you know, even in the slalom, you know, you have these successes, and then you have a coach that comes in and he's teaching you new things, and you're having big improvements. That's, you know, something that we miss when we get to a higher level. You know, I always tell kids when I, you know, see them, I'm coaching them, I'm in the boat judging and they have a PB, I'm like, just please enjoy that PB, because they get so hard to come by. And, you know, to be able to have him come in and just revamp my jumping and teach me new things is what has really strengthened that bond with us. Because how often do you take somebody as a pro and be able to say, okay, come back, let's step back, and then you jump 10 steps forward?
Now, with someone like Jay, he has a lot of pearls of wisdom that he imparts upon his students. And I know that whenever I talked to you a little bit earlier, you were kind of dreading me asking this particular question, and right now you're giggling because you know what I'm going to ask.
I probably know which one it is. I still don't have an answer.
You still don't have an answer, but let's try and scrape an answer through this. What is the one pivotal tip that someone like Jay or anyone else has given you that you have said, okay, this has turned my skiing around, I got to hold on to this, put it in my back pocket, and you use it for the continuance of my career, or even just the immediate future?
You know, I still just don't know what that one thing would be, because honestly, it's not a one kind of thing fix. It's an evolving, it's a constant, like, eyes on you and watching you. It's ever evolving. So I just still don't have an answer to it, because I don't think that there is a one fix answer. There's, you know, even when you do something, if it's how he wants you to turn, that he drills it into you, it becomes second nature that you don't realize anymore of how you used to do it. So there's not just a one tip, because you're out there working on maybe five different things, and then those five things just naturally become habit to where you can move on to the other five things. So it's more of an evolving thing, and I just think more into the fact that it becomes a trust situation, that you trust him, you trust his process. So I think the answer is more of not what he says, but a relationship that progresses to a trust.
So there's like a larger plan, there's a larger scheme involved rather than just spot coaching type deal, yes?
Exactly, yes. I really do think that. And I think for both sides of it, the athlete to the coach and the coach to the athlete, it's more of a longevity, and it's a, you build trust, and then the trust comes to, when you do get in a situation, you're at Masters and it's Rolly, or you're at, you know, certain places and you start tailspinning and you just don't know where you're at, that you can look to him on shore and, okay, I got it. I know what I'm doing. And it could just be even you see him. It's not like he has to even say anything. because you've built a trust and it's like, okay, I know now where my game plan is.
Yes, indeed. And I spoke to you a little bit earlier, and the one thing that came across to me, one of the things that came across, because you're such a multifaceted athlete and you are fascinating beyond a shadow of a doubt. One of the things that you like and detest, you don't like and detest, is lists. And for someone who's meticulous, whose career has that certain level of intricacy, to not even have that just seems mind-boggling to me.
It would. But I think, you know, back to the beginning, I said I have an amazing support system, and that's going to go back to the family. And so I have an older sister, Renee. She's my right-hand person in the world for every aspect of the business, to the skiing, to life in general. And she's my list person. And she'll put the list. She'll put them on posties. She'll put them everywhere. And so maybe that's why I just don't like the list, because I see them all the time. But she keeps me well organized. But, you know, I think it's – I probably have the list in my brain, but I just don't need it in front of me. I don't need to check it off. It's just something that's not how I'm wired. But she has lists, and I see them all the time. So I do have lists in a sense, thanks to my sister.
Yes, indeed.
Do you like lists?
I have a list in front of me.
Yeah, scratching it off.
I mean, it's part of J school training a little bit, you know. So. And I mean, I've started doing this more and more recently because of the subject matter. The skiers that I've interviewed require a little bit more in depth analysis. So that's why I have the list. And and among the things that are left on my list are,
let's our think, ladies.
Our ladies.
Our
yes,
ladies here.
Yes, we're going to hear from them very, very soon. But as I go down the end of my list a little bit here, obviously the amount of world titles that you've won assures first ballot eligibility into the Hall of Fame. No,
you have to retire first.
You have
so
to retire
I'll
first.
Never make the Hall of Fame.
You'll never make the Hall of Fame now, but here's the deal. Obviously, whenever you are eligible for the Hall of Fame, it's tantamount to like leaving a legacy for the sport, you know, for the betterment of the sport. Have you ever thought about that? What kind of thing or what kind of legacy you'd leave behind for future generations within the sport, based upon what you've achieved and what you're going to achieve possibly?
You know, I really haven't, because I always knew that I wouldn't get into the Hall of Fame, because I knew that I would never retire. I will always do the sport. And that's also why, you know, my parents were very instrumental in the career choice of getting an education. You know, they didn't say, hey, you need to go to pharmacy school. They just said, get your education, because anything could happen. You can get hurt. You can get injured. You may never be able to ski at a professional level. You have something to fall back on. Took it literally. So got the careers that are very successful on both sides, which is really hard to juggle. And the pharmacy and then the skiing, two separate worlds, but both, you know, a challenge and successful. And if I do get hurt in skiing, yes, I have the pharmacy, but I also have the pharmacy that way I can always ski. We're an expensive sport, and I want to always be able to ski. So I'll probably never get into the Hall of Fame, just because I don't plan on retiring, and I want to ski forever. I want to ski as long as I can. So I haven't thought about it. I haven't thought about
it. You haven't given it a second thought. You're just like so driven and so focused that whatever extraneous stuff is going on, it's like outside the purview of your blinders.
Well, you know, I love giving back to the sport too. I'll hop in the boat. I'm a judge. I'm a Pan Am judge. I will judge at our regionals. I'll hop in the boat for the boys one, girls one, and judge as much as I can for all of them.
Are you a technical controller though?
No. I am not. I could be an assistant. I've helped Jerry Jackson many times. So I think I could be an assistant. I don't even think, pretty sure I could be an assistant on that. But, you know, as far as that goes, I do think my legacy wouldn't just be about me, my scores, but more on, you know, why we all love skiing. You know, I do it. I go to regionals, I go to nationals. I'll jump in the boat and judge all of the juniors, and it will be hours that I'm in the boat, and I'll jump out and I'll ski. My thing is I want them to have a good time. You know, I'll go and help out at all the junior parties. I help Don Good with the good nationals for the good junior banquet. I want them to see that the pro skiing is about giving back, and we all are a big family in this sport, and that's why we all got into it. That's why I have friends from around the world that I could travel around the world. If I ever got in trouble, if I ever needed something, I'm never alone in the world, anywhere in the world. And it's because of water skiing. And that's, I think, more of what I would want to give as my legacy than, oh, you know, we got to run 41 just to be, you know, to be where she's at.
All right. So, you might not know this, but the first time that we met was like in the late 80s, probably the early part of the 90s. It was at a tournament in Mulberry, the Ski Paradise.
I was Girls One.
You're in Girls One. You were at probably the beginning phase of what's turning out to be an absolute stellar career. And I mean, I'd watch you progress throughout that stage, and you know, it wasn't until a certain point that I feel your career kind of took a little bit of a turn towards slalom skiing, because, I mean, you weren't in the kind of shape that you are in right now, where you've got quite big arms, quite big shoulders, that kind of thing. Yeah. You know, so there must have been a point where you said to yourself, okay, if I'm going to succeed in this slalom event, I'm not the tallest skier in the world, I'm not Jennifer LaPointe, I'm not Susie McCormick, and I'm certainly not, I don't know. Name another tall skier aside from Susie Graham. Susie Graham, yes.
Yep.
Susie McCormick, obviously.
Susie Graham McCormick, yeah.
Yeah, and Jennifer LaPointe. Maybe
Dina Mapple, Camille Duval.
Yeah. And
Kim Laskoff,
you know, relatively tall skiers. In other words, they were all taller than you.
Yep.
So you weren't that tall. So you had to make up for that deficiency with raw power.
Yeah. Yep. You know, I think that all of that changed as far as a turning point for me was in Italy Worlds in Ricetto. And I did win tricks there.
That was 2001, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So I won tricks there, and I didn't make the overall finals. I was like, Dad, I didn't make overall finals. Well, Regina, you didn't get anywhere near 30. You were mid-35. Like, how are you going to make overall finals if you can't run 35?
This was at the time where overall
final.
This was at the time where overall finals was a thing.
Yeah.
And I'll ask you another question about that after this, but carry on.
So, I was like, good point, Dad. Yep, got it. And then from that moment, I was like, this is my weak point. I need to figure out this slalom. And, you know, I just dove in, and that's where my relationship with Dave Good, you know, started. I was able to get on a good ski. I skied with Chris Rossi. I, you know, just there were so many things that kept evolving my slaloming before it was, okay, I need to also strengthen my power. It was learning about skis, learning about rockers. And, I mean, thank you, Dave, you know, for all of the information that he taught me. And there's still so much more that I don't know that I wish he could, you know, instill in me, because we lost so much knowledge. But there's, you know, there's definitely people at the factory that have that information, so I can still learn from that. And then, of course, as you age, you know, I was only 15 at the time, so there was no way I was going to pack on muscles or anything. I evolved, too, into a woman, and then I think, you know, I was able to get stronger just because of my age.
And that is where we'll leave it for part one. In part two, we'll discuss the overall event and also have a talk about the pillars of her career in the sport, her family. Thanks once again to Regina for participating in this interview, and a big shout out to all of you for listening in. Part two will be here before you know it, so until then, take care.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.